Welcome to Cartridge Command, your weekly retro gaming podcast where we discuss and review the classic
and not so classic games of the 8 and 16-bit era. I'm Nick.
And I'm Eric.
And this week's game is Shadowrun for the Genesis Part 3. That's right, we are back for part three of our coverage of the Sega Genesis RPG Shadowrun. And in this episode, we're going to start it off with a little dip right back into our recent experiences, because this has been an ongoing gameplay session for the Dalester over here. So clue us in, Dale. Where how's it going?
Yeah, so last time we left off, I was toward the end of the game. I thought I was a little further than what I was. There's one task that we'll talk about in level by level at the very end, sort of a fetch quest you have to do. Mm-hmm. So I had to go grab this special item, and then I was whisked away to our final boss. And after battling through many, many thugs, I reached the final boss, but I was promptly destroyed. So I'm at the point in the game now that I've reached many times where got to stop, go back, get some karma, get some new yen. Buff up the party.
Right on, yeah. It's the good old gameplay loop, you know. So close, you can taste it.
Let me ask you, Nick. You had a second playthrough. Where are you at in that?
I did. I'll be honest with you. I was kind of busy this week, so I didn't get a chance to really fire it up. Here's a little spoilers for our listeners. I had beaten our next game for the Super Nintendo and started. Here's a little mysterious clue. I had to work on a new emulator and figure out how to use it for some things. And it was a little trickier than I thought. So I ended up piddling away some time trying to pretend to be a computer hacker. But I am no Rihanna Harsbane or even Phantom. My computer skills are limited, to say the least. But got it all worked out. So, yeah, I hadn't gotten through. I'm trying to think. I wasn't really aggressively playing through the game. It was more, I really just wanted to play through a bit as a shaman, get some experience using the magic system and stuff, which we will talk about a little later in this ep. And wanted to try out some new things with different shadow runners using as companions. Again, we'll talk a little more about that in a little bit. So, yeah. But, I got what I wanted out of it, the learning. But I will say there was a certain charm to the grinding in my first playthrough that was not there the second time, that dopamine rush of finally being able to fight and hurt enemies wasn't here this time, because I knew what was up, and it was just like, oh, okay, we gotta, I don't know, back to back, it's kind of rough, but you know.
Shut him low.
All right, so here in, I guess, a long, in our gameplay section, which we're still pecking away at, we need to talk about the magic, because you can make yourself into a shaman, and there are several Shadowrunners who are shaman. This is a magical, futuristic world, and other than fighting monsters and hellhounds, we haven't really kind of talked about it much, so it's of course, a pretty unique system, so...
Yeah, I've said it before and I'll say it again, but this is another layer of this game that you can avoid entirely if you don't feel like messing around with the magic system. I mean, I shot guns the whole game. I was running and gunning, didn't touch the matrix, didn't touch any spells either. But I will say that watching playthroughs of this game, the spells look like a lot of fun, and it looks like it makes the game a little easier.
There are, yeah, I would say so in some ways, in that, you know, you start with a limited selection of spells, and to right off the bat, there's no magic points or spell points or anything in this game. You buy spells, and they're kind of like weapons in that you equip one, and that's the spell you're going to use. Instead of any sort of, like I said, magic points, the spells each have drain, which is like they will take health from you, essentially. Your mental health, that is, not physical. So it's a little different. But, you know, either of them that gets down to zero, you're dead either way. So you can offset this. They have magic equipment. There's like magic fetishes where you can hold, I think, in one slot in your inventory. I don't know if it's, you can only hold 6 or is it 10? I don't know. But they will absorb points of drain. So if you have stronger spells, they'll take that for you if that's how you want to cast them. Because you don't have to, because much like we kind of mentioned the posture earlier in the game, where it's like it adjusts you from offensive to defensive, gives you little perks either way, depending on how you want to play. It also is a way to kind of control the AI of your shadow running companions. But just like in cyberspace, the magic has a posture as well, which will affect how powerful and successful your spell is, but also how much drain it costs. So most spells, even the, I mean, quote unquote, stronger spells, it's kind of like using the posture determines how powerful and is how much drain it has. So you can always adjust your posture to prevent drain if you want, which is kind of what I did, because I didn't really feel like messing with the buying a bunch of fetishes, and they're disposable, you know, kind of like, I guess we'd kind of glossed over it if we even mentioned it, but you know, your guns do have ammo. So
yeah,
even though that becomes super common later from slaughtering people in corporation buildings, the so fetishes don't so much.
Consumable items then. So one time you use them, it's gone. You have to buy more. Sort of like the clips in the game, I guess, which I don't know if we mentioned already, the clips are universal, which is nice. You don't have to buy shotgun ammo or SMG ammo. You just buy clips. So
yeah. It's cool. But that's another one of those kind of features where you're like, it makes sense and it's kind of realistic, but it's also, except for the very beginning when you're super poor and weak, they become like an afterthought so quickly in the game. At least I thought, where I was like, well, I don't, after leaving Redmond Barons shortly thereafter, it was like, well, I kill enough people that drop clips, and it just never seems to ever be a thing I even have to worry about buying anymore. That it makes me wonder why they even had them in the game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, mid-game, certainly there's some points where you can get stuck in a building and run out of ammo, and then you're like, well, yeah, I just have to get beat to death now. So, but I definitely see what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, you'll start with kind of, there's the two big offensive spells are, there's the Mana Zap, Mana Blast, and Mana Storm, kind of 1, 2, 3, where, yeah, the mana spells, they attack their willpower, and I think it does mental damage to them.
Yeah.
Whereas there's also a similar flame kind of trio of spells that will do physical damage.
Yeah, there's really only a handful of different kinds of spells that we're dealing with here. You've got your offensive, which is just going to do damage to the enemies. And then there's, I guess, still in the offense class, what you were just mentioning, the Mana Blast, which is going to affect your enemy's mind, right? And then, we've got some that affect movement. You got an invisibility spell, and then your basic cure spell, and some status effect stuff as well.
Each of the attack ones, they kind of have the middle. There's like the Flame Bolt and the Mana Blast, and those are the good ones, because the third, the Mana Storm and Hell Blast are like area of effect spells. They will hurt your guys, so that's not cool. I played around with the barrier spell a little. It's all right. It's good against hellhounds or other quick enemies because they can't get through it, but you can still shoot them through it. Invisibility is kind of an MVP. That's when you're in the, when you're doing acquisition or extraction corporate runs, you can turn you can cast it on any of your party if you have other people, but if you only need to cast it on yourself, and the cameras and other like guards and stuff will just ignore the rest of your party, even if they're walking there with you. So it's nice.
Comical. That's basically why I got Trent in the party. I would have him cast invisibility and just run around, and the rest of us would follow, and nobody would care that we'd just run through the building and rob all the safes.
Yeah, it's great. It really helps. And much like your different skills and stuff, you can level up your spells by buying these spell foci, but they take up an inventory slot and you just have to carry them around. And there are a few magic talismans and stuff you can get that will protect you or do other, I don't know. They're okay. They didn't seem that super hot, I thought, but it's kind of nice to not, you don't have to worry about ammunition. And on the whole, except for the talismans, I feel like the spells are a bit cyber than, not necessarily guns, but cyberware. You know, you don't want to get that, because that will reduce your essence, which will reduce the effectivity of your magic.
So really, if you're going to be a mage in this game, then your defense naturally is going to be a little bit lower because you're limited on cyberware, right?
Yep. I did see some in like some threads and stuff people talked about where it's not that big of a hit to take, like maybe if you get your, as long as your essence doesn't actually go below 5, they're like, well, you can go ahead, you can buy a couple of the cheaper things that might help a little, cost less than a full point of essence. But I didn't mess with it because it didn't really seem that necessary. I don't know, because I had gotcha. I had shadow runners to help me out, and you just kind of black mage style from the back, shoot a couple spells. They're strong. It always seemed like, even using the, you know, like I said, the medium, the single target beefy flame bolt or mana blast were the main spells I used the entire time. You can get heal wounds. It's good because it'll save you from having to deal with any of the
med kits.
Yeah, but because you can just max, you know, you can heal yourself in one thing, but it's not really built for in combat. It's really hard to get that, aim it at the appropriate person in time, because everyone's constantly getting hurt. So
gotcha. And then you've always got rock skin too to buff your defense as well, so you got a spell to help you out there. So
that's true, to make up for your lack of armor.
Did you use that at all, let me ask?
I did a little bit. It was okay, but as we'll get into in the level by levels, like, most of the boss fights, and they did not last long for me, because while I'm blasting away, I just had both my other Shadowrunners just run in and start, you know, kicking
butt. Wreaking havoc, man. Going crazy.
It is interesting, though. Yeah, you do want to kind of pay attention, because it's like hand razors, or any enemy that just attacks you physically without a weapon, will do mental damage. But if you use guns or the actual spurs, then they will do physical damage. So it's important to, you want to keep track of what your other Shadowrunners damage they're dealing, so you're all dealing the same type, so that otherwise you're kind of splitting your damage in half among two totals. So it doesn't,
essentially your enemy then has double the health if you're both attacking two different life bars, you know.
Yeah, kind of. So it's a little weird, but once you figure it out, because that's why you've got your different mana blast and flame bolt.
And one more question about magic from me is the sleep spell. I haven't seen anybody use this in a walkthrough. Is this effective? Is there a point in the game that sleep is really handy?
I did not use it much. I didn't use sleep, confusion, or stink. The same way with kind of like the barrier spell. I used it once or twice, but it's not fast enough to really, I don't know. I always felt like it was like, well, there's just, you know, it's going down, and it's almost like you have to go out of your way and hold back your, I guess because I wasn't alone for most of the game, I didn't see the need for these kind of spells, because it would take less time to just kill them, you know?
Yeah,
most of the basic enemies, you know, I guess maybe at some bosses it might work, but most of the enemies are so weak that it feels kind of wasteful to use like debuffs or other, you know what I mean?
100%. Got you, big guy.
Yeah, so that's a little magic primer for our cartridge commandos out there. And I only started to delve into it. I'm sure there's more to it. So if anyone's out there has got some corrections, let me know. But much like the cyber decking and such, you know, it's one of three kind of character paths you can take through the game, and they all seem comparable or good. You know, there's not a stinker out there, you know, so you can kind of do it your way. And I like that. All right. So, Dale, I thought it would be fun, since this game is full of different characters you can recruit and, you know, different Shadowrunners that you can welcome into your party of three. I thought it'd be kind of fun to go through the list and talk about them a little bit, because I definitely started off my first playthrough just kind of doing everything by myself because I was too cheap. Yeah, money's tight at the beginning, but once you figure it out and how to play, kind of, and you get past that first hump, it really behooves you to check out a few of these Shadowrunners.
Yes, indeed. And like you said, the first half of this game, you're really just working on yourself. I feel like that kind of is the first half of the game, is to level yourself up, and then the back half of the game is to level your party up.
Right, right. And you can test them out if you know, depending on how much money you're willing to throw around.
Yeah, well, we've got 10 to choose from, and you're right, they are all expensive, so it's not like you can just pick and choose and see who you like. It's kind of an investment. You got to go get the money, decide if you really want this type of character on your team, then give them a shot and see if you like them. And then if you don't, that's wasted time and money.
So let's start with good old Ricky. He is a dwarf rat shaman, and I think he's the only one you can find at the beginning in the Redmond Barrens.
Yeah, he's an early pick, and I have to say, he's got some of the funniest character art in the game.
Yeah.
It's an orc man with some armor on, holding a cane, looking goofy.
And he's not really that hot. He's a pretty weak starting caster. One thing I didn't do this because I'm not a dirty cheater, but you can hire him at the beginning for pretty, like, I don't know, less than 150. I don't know. But if you just hire him and then take all his equipment and sell it, you'll get more money than you spent to hire him for one run. So there is that if you want. You know.
You are a scoundrel, my friend. Yeah, you fit into this world. This is exactly what Joshua would do.
It's out there. He only has a few spells. I think he has Stink, he has Flame Bolt, and Invisibility, and Rock Skin at the beginning. So, yeah.
Invisibility is huge. That could definitely be helpful.
Yeah, yeah. Next up, we have Winston Mars, a troll samurai.
Winston, the OGs in this game. Winston is the boy. Like, if you're not playing with Winston, you're doing something wrong.
Did you run with Winston for a while?
He was one of my main guys after I got towards the third quarter of the game. Once I had a little bit of money, Winston was the dude to put money into.
Sure.
He's so beefy, man. He's a tank. He just runs into every fight and wipes people out.
He's huge. Yeah, it's a lot of fun because, you know, trolls are, you know, orcs, I think, are described as bigger than humans a little bit. But trolls are like, I remember this from the tabletop RPG, you know, they're like 8 or 9 feet tall. They're huge. And they have, you know, your stats and stuff that you start with, your body, quickness, etc. They all top out at 6. But for the different races, they top out at different levels. Like you start, I think Winston starts with a body of 7 and you can raise that up. They have a much higher max. So you can get a lot of health and stuff and do a lot of damage because they'll have higher strength. If that's
Mars, Winston's kind of your traditional tank character is how I thought of him. He's, you know, a lot of HP, does some damage. He kind of goes out there and absorbs all the attacks from the enemies.
Yeah, yeah. He's great. I liked him a lot. I used him with my shaman run through. I had him and I decked him out all for hand-to-hand combat because I was kind of wanting to check that out as well. And he's insane. Like, you don't even need guns, like, because he'll just run up there right away and blast them so fast. It's crazy. I recommend it. It's worth a try, especially if you get with him, because I think he comes with skill in shotguns, which isn't bad, but anyone can do that. But he's a huge beast. So,
and you can pick him up at the Big Rhino in the Penumbra District.
That's right. More expensive than Ricky, of course, because he's actually useful. But I don't know. We don't. The thing is that with the prices, they're all kind of relative to your reputation and negotiation and how many times you've used them. So it's not really worth naming their prices necessarily here.
And real quick, too, these guys just stick around for a mission or until they die, right?
Yes, or you can hire them permanently, which I did myself because you just get tired of going back. If you know, you're like, when I was playing my second playthrough with the shaman, I already knew. I was like, this is my plan and these are the ones I'm going to use. So it made sense for me to just hire them permanently. But again, like, you know, you can hire them to go on, say, an acquisition run or whatever, and you can go there, you can get the stuff and leave, but they will stick with you until you go back to get paid from whatever Johnson hired you. So there is right that on. Now what about Trent Delisario? Did you use this human mage?
Well, if the listeners have been listening the last two episodes, they know that Trent is my one of my other main guys that I used quite a bit.
Okay.
There's really only three Shadowrunners I used.
Okay.
Trent and Winston being two of them. And Trent was huge for acquisition runs because of that invisibility spell. You never trip an alarm. Nobody ever shoots at you. You can just walk through any building you want with that invisibility spell. Plus, he can actually hold his own in combat.
Sure, it's a great time saver, man. That invisibility spell is worth it for certain. And what about, did you use Peter Uwehr, the dwarf Decker?
And that's a big negative. I may have bumped into him once, but I was already set on my party at that point.
Yeah, I saw him. I never used him. He's not really that great. You know, I think he only starts with a 2 skill in computer, so he's not even good at what he says. I think he's kind of built to be more of a fighter slash decker kind of, at least it seems that way. I didn't use him.
They really leaned into the decker stereotype with his character art as well, because he's carrying a giant keyboard in his arms, looking angry too.
He lets you know, man. He's like, hey, I'm not screwing around. This is what I'm doing. We also have Walking Bear, the orc bear shaman. And she, you get her at Council Island, I think.
Yeah, in the Friendship restaurant.
Yeah, she's all right because she's a little hardier than most of the other magic characters, you know, like physically take a little more damage to bring her down, but, you know, nothing too crazy here. I didn't use this. I do recall reading on some forums and stuff that people said she was all right. She was worth it if you're going that route.
I also read online that she was good. And when I got to her, I strongly considered getting her on the team. But I think at the time I was a little strapped for cash. So I was like, nah.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk away now, bear.
What about Phantom, the elf Decker?
Negative. Did not touch this guy at all.
I did on my second playthrough because he's not bad. He's kind of like a cheaper version of Rihanna Heartsbane, who we'll get to. But, you know, he's a Decker, and I was playing, you know, I had decided I wanted my Shaman and my two fighters early on. But I used him briefly to basically do that kind of cheat where it's like you go, I think it's Vigor and Jarl or one of the different Johnsons out there. You know, you go there, you get the easy matrix run that you can get, and you keep doing that till you get a particular one. And so I just hired him for like a couple runs until I got the one I wanted. And then I could just go in and start downloading tons and tons of data and selling it to Roscoe. And yeah. So he was all right for that. He worked pretty well. He starts with a 5 in computer, which is pretty solid. And, yeah. And it's definitely more than you need for that run.
He's got his time and his place. I don't think he's going to stay till the end with us, though. Not one of those types of characters.
Yeah. What about Eileen Two Fists?
Eileen Two Fists, the third person in the triad of Shadowrunners that I had on my team throughout the game.
Okay.
I used her quite a bit once we bust her out of prison, which is coming up later in the level by level.
That's right. You have to. She does have a kind of quest requisite, but she's a human samurai, a great fighter. I think once you rescue her, then you can find her in the jump house, which is in Redmond Barrens. She'll pop in there. And
yes, indeed.
Yeah, she's pretty good. I used her in conjunction with Winston. It was those two, and I set them up both for melee combat and really kick some butt, man. They would both run in there and just slaughter people, so it was nice.
Yeah, my only issue with Eileen is that if you follow the story, I guess the way that you're sort of supposed to, you get her kind of late in the game, so then you're looking at a late game grind if you want to buff her up and get her some karma.
Right on. Yeah. And that's something we should mention, too. I think we touched on it a bit in the past, but it's like you get them. They all have different kind of starting stats and stuff, but you are in full control of that going forward. You can buff up anything you want. You can sell their equipment, buy new stuff, switch it around. It's all you.
It's all you, man. Do what you want.
Yeah. And next we have Freya Goldenhair, an elf mage. And
Nick, this seems like a character nobody I've seen talk about or use at all in the game. I don't think I've even seen her sprite. I may not have even bumped into her, but she looks sick. Like, if I played this game again, I would probably try her out.
She seems good as a mage. So I didn't use her, my first playthrough. I kind of shied away from the magic because I was already trying to learn other stuff. And on my second playthrough, I was a shaman, so I didn't really need her, so I didn't really use her. But she's got a lot of spells, it seems, and, you know, good sorcery and good stats, so I'm sure she's fine for a high-end, you know. She's a much more expensive than some of the other runners we've passed up, but if you have the need of some magical assistance in your party, she's a good buy, it seems.
That's right, and you can find her in the club. Club Penumbra.
Yeah, find her in the club. Bottle full of bub.
Magic's what she's got. If that's what she, I don't know. Never mind.
The magic stick.
We'll
that's
that
another
out.
50 cent song.
Yeah. Just do the whole library right now.
I think those are the only two I know. They're both 20 years old. Okay. But we also have Rihanna Heartsbane, the elf Decker. And I used her a lot my first playthrough.
Yeah, she looks like she's really good, but I unfortunately didn't use her. I think if I did a second playthrough, I'd probably mess around with Freya. I think I would definitely have Rihanna on the team, though.
Yeah, she's for sure worth it. She's got, you know, great, starts with a 6 computer skill, so she's better than Phantom. She is more expensive, one of the more expensive ones, but I found her to fulfill her roles very well, and it's pretty cool. She's who I used to do the Chernobyl side quest as well.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Which I did, you know, I eventually ended up hiring her permanently.
Yeah. Sick character art too. Great sprite.
Yeah. She's cool. Finally, the last of the Shadowrunners is Stark. Not Tony Stark, not Jon Snow, or what's it? Damn it. I'm trying to think. I used to love Game of Thrones. Not Eddard Stark, but just Stark. He is the survivor of, he was on Michael's shadow running team who got killed. He's got his own like weird quest you have to go on. That's just, it's as a true side quest. You would not find him. You know, it's not like we kind of mentioned before Eileen Two Fists. You kind of have to do that. It's part of a different quest sequence, but not Stark. He's all optional.
Yeah, for the Final Fantasy VII players out there, he's our Vincent. So he's totally optional, but he does have his own side quest, just like you said. And he is, in fact, Michael's best friend in the lore as well, which I guess makes him interesting to Joshua to find.
Yeah, which basically it's like you can find him out in the wilderness. Like you go to the Salish Shihei, go through some cave. Like I remember doing this pretty early because I had read that he was one of the better shadow runners in my first game, and he is, you know, and he's free, and he comes decked out with lots of cyberware and all kinds of good stuff. He's a true hardcore butt kicker.
Yes, I sought him out early as well, just on the fact that he's free alone. So
yeah, that was my I was like, all right, well, I'm just gonna get him before, you know, that was before I had even really looked into hiring shadow runners or anything. But it was an early side quest, which was pretty comical because it was way too weak to be out there in the wilderness, especially by myself, like just running, where I was like, maybe some hellhounds won't spawn this time. I got no way to fight them. But you kind of have to go and you find him in like a hut. He's all wounded. And then you can go back to good old Seattle General Hospital and talk to Dr. Haversheen. And then she will get him, like, she'll be like, oh, my God, he's alive. Or, you know, and they bring him back to the hospital. But then she tells you, you need a mechanical heart, basically a prototype that you have to go steal from the Fucci building.
Yeah, those Fuccis, they made a prototype cyber heart, because currently Stark's only kept alive by shaman magic also.
So that's right.
Almost like him over there.
So yeah, once you do that, you can, he'll join you. I think you have to go meet him at Underground 93 in Puyallup Barrens. And once you do, he'll stay with you. And if your whole party dies, you know, you'll respawn without him, but you can go get him again for free. He'll reappear there. But he was
a great, the man.
Yes, great fighter. I had him decked out with guns and ready to kick butt when I played, and he never failed me once.
With him being a samurai, I feel like you're kind of choosing between him or Winston when you're building out your team, because, you know, Winston's a samurai as well. But I think I'm going Winston every time.
Yeah, like I said, I just got him, and then later, once I started being like, all right, I'm going to figure out this Matrix stuff, that's when it was like, oh, I need Rihanna Heartsbane. And so that was worked out pretty well. But I do want to say, at least as far as Stark, this was one of my gripes about this game, and it drove me nuts, was that his sprite is the exact same as your character. It's the exact same color and everything. Like, it was so freaking confusing sometimes, where I'm trying to be like, which one is it? Is that me or him? You know,
yeah.
You stop moving after you're fighting, and then
it's like, where's Josh? Who am I targeting? What's happening?
Yeah, it was maddening. I was like, come on, guys. But yeah, so those are all the Shadowrunners the game has to offer. So, you know, you can pick and choose however you want, you know, and even if some of them, you know, your Rickies or your Phantoms or your whatevers aren't that hot to begin with, if you like them, then you can always level them up and customize them. And that's one of the appeals of some of them, is I think in the weaker ones, you know, when they haven't spent all their essence on cyberware yet, or, you know, you can really tweak them out if you like.
Yeah, a lot of customization.
For sure. I do. It's one of the things, too, that I think one of the limitations of this game is that you're just Joshua and you're a human. And you while you can kind of change your class into whatever you want, it would be really nice if you could make your own character, being able to use all the other crazy races in this game, the magical elves or dwarves, or, you know, you don't get any of that. It would have been cool to be able to enjoy them firsthand, sort of, instead of just commanding them.
That's a cool thought, actually. It's, for instance, if you wanted to build Joshua as an orc or something, then maybe every orc you interact with in the game, you know, you don't need a pass for them to let you into the club anymore, you know, something of that nature. Yeah, could be some fun there.
Absolutely. All right, so we are back to the level-by-level section.
Yes, we are. Nick, would you like me to do a quick recap of where we are?
Yeah, bring us up to speed, bro.
All right, so far we have spoken to Tabitha Shale in Seattle, who was swiftly shot down by a Rinraku strike team. But she did tell us we should talk to or pursue Mako Sochu and also speak to Frosty the Elf. So we traversed to the Amerindian lands and we sought out David Owlfeather. And he tells us that we need to find his brother, who is apparently in Lord of the Rings, because his name is Aragorn.
Yeah.
So we travel to rescue Aragorn, and he runs off like a sissy. Yeah. And then we return to David, and he tells us that we need to seek out the wisest one in the lands, who is Spirit Eyes.
Yes.
So once we get to Spirit Eyes, then we need to grab a couple things for him, and then he will be a chum for us. So at this point in the game, we're wasting some gargoyles to get a gargoyle horn, we're killing hellhounds to get pelts, or we're getting destroyed by hellhounds, one or the other.
Mm-hmm,
And then we're venturing into the caves to look for a feathered scale, which we are jumped again by another strike team. But we do get to meet our friendly dragon, Licortrix, who hooks us up with our crispy feathered scale. So we complete our quest for Spirit Eyes, and he reveals that our true enemy is Thon.
Yes, and Thon is an evil shaman, right?
Yes, he is.
He's the weird, yeah. Yep, so...
All the while, we've been running and gunning for Johnsons. We've been flying through the digital planes of the Matrix, stealing data, capping ghouls, cracking safes, and stealing some sweet new yen. Get that karma, baby.
That's right. Get it as fast as you can and as much as you can, because you're going to need it. And so, as we have mentioned, I think, in a previous episode, you kind of get the three plot lines, and that was our... That was one of them, but we still have some other leads so to follow. And all of this is, you know, pretty well laid out in your personal assistant. If you go to your tips and clues, kind of, it lists them down in order, and will let you know what you're.
I think
up
I
to.
Mentioned it once in a previous episode, but that tips and clues section is probably the only thing that's going to tell you where you're at in the game if you boot up a save that you haven't touched in a while.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. But so here, One of these threads of story, you might say, is kind of called the Mako Sochu. We've heard that name before. He's associated with the Rinraku. And we get a lead to go to the club, the Big Rhino, and to ask Mortimer Reed about Mako Sochu. You know, you have to take a cab. That's in the Penumbra District. And he just mentions, basically, he just kind of tells you, you know, you can try to interrogate him, but he just says Mako Sochu's shown up a bit in the club Penumbra. So you get a clue to go there and
hop in the cab and we're on our way.
Yeah, which this, you might not want to do this one if you're at the, if you're just starting. Because
I will say, yeah, I did the other a story before we jumped into this. This is the last one that I did personally. I don't know how difficult they all are. Or if there is a difficulty path to take, but this is the last one that I did before the end game.
Yeah, I was kind of moving through the other ones. I don't know if I did them first, but when I would get to a point where I'm like, oh, geez, this is just too tough. I'm going to go back and level up. I didn't really have to here because I had done most of the other ones, but you don't have to complete them.
Yeah.
You know, you can do chunks of each one and come back to them as you feel.
And that's sort of how I did it too. It was all kind of piecemeal. You could go talk about, you know, what's going on with Mako Sochu and then go back and do the elf side quest if you want.
Yeah, yeah. But here, as soon as you get there, you roll into the club and you'll see good old Mako there. And then you are immediately attacked by yet another Rinraku strike team. And he'll attack you as well. So he's a little tougher, I think, than the other ones.
This fight gave me a little trouble. I did have to go do some runs to level a few things up for this.
You want to be beefed up if you can't help it. And a few extra hands in the form of some Shadowrunners can only help. he'll let you know that while his team was assigned to monitor your brother Michael's team, but they weren't supposed to kill them. And he kind of drops Caleb Brightmore's name, who was the Johnson behind Michael's fatal run. Although we've already heard that, I think. But yes, and he also tells you about Ito Ogami.
He's the project director.
Yes.
And he's running Operation Thon, which, you know, sounds pretty serious, man.
I've heard that name Thon somewhere before.
Let me redact my previous statement about grinding for for this Rinraku strike. It's the next one, spoiler alert, because we're going to go find Ito. And they tell us that he's in the Matchstick nightclub. When we get to Matchstick, Then we're jumped again with Ito's thugs, and that this fight, this one got me a few times.
Yeah, it's tough, man. And it's this is an interesting point too. Yeah, I get so sick of the Rinraku guys, but there are some Johnsons. I kind of mentioned them before, Vigor and Jarl. And as you'll find out, they have been kind of working for Ito. So after this point, when you defeat him, they will disappear, and you can't any of the if you haven't got any contacts you want from them, you can't get them now. And they have some of the lower level Matrix runs, and you know those will just go away once you beat them. So I made sure to do all my cyber stealing of money and data before you get this far in this quest line.
Yeah, I read about these guys, and it's sort of a missable item, and that's why I saved this one for last, so that you have access to these guys for, you know, the bulk of the game if you need them.
Right. But yeah, so you beat down these other Rinraku jerks.
Take down Ito himself.
Yes.
Which, for the first time, I think, in the game, we are greeted to some sick artwork and a little cutscene, right?
That's right, yeah. Gun down this loser. You think he's related to Judge Lance Ito?
Maybe. I have to Google it, man.
Hey, this is in, 2050? Maybe it was a descendant. Who knows? But you get some clues here. You get some holopics, some weird, information about Rinraku's activity dealing with Michael's run. And you get, 10,000 New Yen, which ain't too bad.
And you get Ito's passcode, which you can use optionally if you want to hack into his system for more information, but it's not a necessity to advance the story.
And it should be said, that is one of the tough Matrix levels. Matrix runs. Like, you want to be ready to roll.
Ooh, that's the big daddy stuff there.
Well, if you have the right equipment and stuff, but it's just you deal with some of the tougher ices and stuff. I didn't really mention it before, but the worst ones of all are called tar pits, where you'll approach a node and you'll have to run a program, and that will wake up the tar pit, and it will kind of suicide itself, but it will also, you lose that program. So if it was your attack program, you're out of luck.
Or, bummer.
You know, so that's part of a strategy too, is it's like you have your main three, and then you always carry two of the cheapest level one programs that you can just okay, here's the thing, use this, it turns out to be the it's my crappy program, and then I just kill it. So
yeah, at this point, after Ito's dead, yeah, we've got our two pieces of map, which is our the last two fetch quests before we can go to end game, but we haven't done the elf side quest yet. The main quest.
Well, yeah, you can go get if you do a raid in the Rinraku HQ, I think you can go get that map overlay now, but
yeah,
you do not have to. That's a tough
run. Another note. Yeah, I was going to say is that another reason that I saved this one for the end is that the Rinraku area is kind of your in-game area. It's each area is sort of has a difficulty attached to it. You know, Redmond being the easiest, obviously, with Rinraku being the hardest, I think. I mean, it's all the encounters and all the runs seem to be the most difficult in this area.
And I don't know at what point this truly starts happening, but I recall Rinraku strike teams just become a random encounter at some point where you're just walking around. Yeah. And most of the time you're like, oh, here comes some dumb Halloweeners or some crappy gang members. But then sometimes it's like, nope, it's Rinraku strike team. And they roll out and start blasting away. And if you're not ready for it, it can be very bad for you.
Yeah, and just to be clear, most times in this game, when you get jumped by anything, it's often two guys, maybe three guys. The wolves always seem to come in fours or threes, which sucks. Yeah. But the Rinraku strike teams, it's always four to five guys. Like, they're maxed out, man. And you said it. I just played this the other day, and I was in a building doing an extraction run. And every time you trip that alarm, man, it's five Rinraku guys every time. So they just beat the hell out of you.
They're not playing around, so you've got to be ready, chummer. All right, Cartridge Commandos, we are going to call it there for this week. We will be back next week with part four of this Shadowrun for Sega Genesis gaming coverage. It will be the final one, so we'll be back, lay down some review, and if anyone, you know, if you guys have any tips, rebuttals, or, you know, am I way off base about Magic? Is it way better than I thought? Am I making the Matrix sound too cool or lamer than it really is? Either way, let us know, and there's several ways you can do it. You can hack into the Matrix and let us know at cartridgecommand@gmail.com. You can give us a try on X, or the artist formerly known as Twitter. If you really want to, go for it. There's also Facebook. So many options in this digital age. So, you know, drop us a line. Let us know. Do you have any We Love Game suggestions or tips or tricks or anything? We love it all, and we love it from you. So give it to us, baby.
Will we see an Instagram in the future, Nick?
Maybe. I don't know. You want to run it for us? Yeah. Are you on Instagram? Do you guys want to let us know? I've never used it, but I have looked at photos from Instagram on Reddit. So there. So yeah, we'll see you all in a week. And you know, I'd like to end this episode with a special thanks to, guess who? Radiant Blur. They suggested this game, and I've had a great time so far covering it. So yeah. It's that easy, folks. Radiant Blur did it. They shot us an email, and they got us to play their game. You could do it, too. So be a pepper and drink Dr. Pepper. And as always, Cartridge Commandos,
game on!
Game on!
Game on!
My lame ass has to work at 5 in the morning.
Oh, that's the pits, man. That sucks.
Yeah, I know. Well, I get up at like 4, so it's like... Ugh.